Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald from Ghost Hunters International, and you're listening to Para Investigators Radio.
EIR Radio is mainly an opinion paranormal talk show. All opinions, comments, or statement of facts expressed by PIR Radio's guests are strictly their own and do not represent or to be endorsed by PIR Radio, ASPRN, Paranormal Radio Network, and their affiliates or sponsors.
Welcome to PIR Radio. PIR Radio is sponsored by the Peach State Paranormal Society and www.hauntedtube.com. Let's now go get your paranormal radio experience with your hosts, Kurt Smith and Bill Horton.
It's Sunday, and you know it's PIR Radio time. Thank you for everyone tuning into PIR Radio tonight. We appreciate it. I'm live on the Paranormal Radio Online Network, the People's Paranormal Radio Network, and New Afterlife Talk Radio Network. Hopefully everyone can hear us out there. But if not, join us in the Pro Chat Room. I know we're live there. You can hear us there. We would love to have you in there, and you can interact with us. As always, don't forget, check out our podcast. You can check it out on iTunes, Podomatic, and many podcatching sites out there. Hopefully you enjoy the show. And as always, we welcome any comments or feedback. And if you're interested in a certain topic, you can email us. Just check out the PIR website, www.pirradio.com, and contact us. And if you want to suggest a topic, we will try to get a guest on for some of the show to talk about that topic. And we appreciate that. As always, I have my co-host with me from... Probably, I'm going to guess. I haven't looked at the weather, so this is just a guess. I'm going to try to use my psychic intuitive. I think it's going to be maybe a little cold and maybe a little bit of snow, but not too much in Philadelphia.
Man, you must be psychic, Kurt, because that's what it is. It's very cold, and it was very icy, and it had a little snow. And actually, I was driving home late last night, and there was a little accident in front of me, and I can tell you about that later. But it is always chilly in Philly.
Well, we had a cold streak here, so I figured, you know, if it's going to be cold here, it's got to be cold there. It's only fair.
And you know what? You know who's to blame, right?
The GOP.
I would go there, but I'm not the show. It does start with a G, but it's the groundhog.
Oh yeah, the damn groundhog! Can't we just cook him and fry him and deep fry him with some gravy and mashed potatoes? It's his fault.
Yeah, give him six more weeks of winter. Feed him some poison, I guess.
Damn.
Then he won't see his shadow. Anyway, you know, Kurt, it was a great week. You know, actually, it was good to get back out there with Lori, and it was me and six other girls at this investigation at Grumblethorpe. And I want to tell you about that. Do you have any more announcements to make before I get into it?
No announcements at all. I let everyone know at the beginning, you know, if they have a special topic they want us to cover, email us and let us know and we'll see what we can do. We're open to anything. And I should say it could be any topic. We're not just strictly paranormal anymore. We'll go into anything, you know. We're always willing to find the subject to learn. We want to learn ourselves and, you know, hopefully the listeners can learn something too. That's our goal.
That's awesome. So as you well know, we went to this place called Grumblethorpe, and unknowns to me that they really don't have paranormal investigations there. So it's sort of a historic site. There was somebody that died on the front. I thought it was upstairs, but when we got there, she said, no, there's the alleged bloodstains are here in the living room. And they weren't really alleged bloodstains. They were actually, she says, they were from the lye that they used to dry up the blood. So that kind of makes sense, right? Interestingly enough, two things did happen. Well, I have
real quick though, Grumblethorpe. Is that on that university you were talking about? I just want to make sure.
Grumblethorpe is 5267 Germantown Ave. It's in Philadelphia, PA. It was the home of the Whistler family. It was built for their summer residence in 1744 by a Philadelphia merchant and wine importer, John Whistler. And they became named, I think, as they say, because you can look it up at in Wikipedia, but it's Grumblethorpe, one word. But they said the name came from an English family or an English place, and they liked the name, and they named the house that, and it was their summer home.
It sounds something like out of Harry Potter. I'm not trying to be mean or anything, but that's what.
Right, that's interesting. And interestingly enough, I mentioned this to somebody else, and they said, oh, they have that garden. And I didn't even know anything about a garden. But yes, there's in fact a garden in the back that they allegedly have garden tours or something in the summer. And so it's more famous for the garden tour. And the neighborhood's still kind of shaky over there. I mean, really shaky. So that end of Germantown Ave. But the interesting things that happened, Kurt, and I want you to, you know, it seems like every, you know, we have the Ghost Hunters store here. It's actually in New Jersey. It's about an hour drive, but they're on the internet, and they always have new gadgets to sell some prospective ghost hunter. And one of the things that Lori brought, and I was kind of shocked to see this little, so if something comes near this little device, it's a little black box and had a little choo-choo train up on top that actually looked like you could wind it up. So like an old-fashioned train, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, interestingly enough, if you come within like 5 inches of this thing, it'll kind of set off a little chirp, you know, chirp, little alarm, little buzzer. So I said, oh, well, what? I don't understand. So, you know, I kind of looked at it and said, oh. So Beth opens up one. She has this big glass lantern that looked like an old-fashioned lantern. And I said, well, I'm so confused about this. Why is one a train and one a lantern, you know? Well, what would be your guess, Kurt?
Why would one be a train and one be a lantern?
Yeah, and they had different varieties of these things.
Are they trying to make them to look like they're period timepieces?
Exactly, yeah, and I kind of didn't get that. You know, you'd think I'd be smarter than you, but you have one up on me now, Kurt.
That was just a guess. I mean, I was trying to think, okay, East Coast train, but, you know, I would figure more West Coast would be train.
It was more like a toy train, and it was very tiny, so maybe like a child would go up to it and want to touch it.
Yeah, true. That's, I mean, I could see that, yes.
So, interestingly enough, we're sitting in this room where there's a dollhouse, so we set up the train, and then we set up this lantern in the same room. And the other neat thing somebody had was, and it actually scared us at one point, because our infrared set it off. It was just a little baby doll. We set in this little, there was this huge dollhouse, and there has this little baby chair. So we set this doll in the baby chair, and it was a peekaboo doll. I don't know if you've ever seen them. But if you walk in front of them, it says peekaboo, and it puts up the little sheet and puts it down.
Yeah, my nephew has one of those. But it's a bear, though. It's pretty funny.
Oh, that's funny. So this must be the same thing, but a little baby. Interestingly enough, at one point in the night, we're sitting there, everyone's sitting still, and the peekaboo doll goes off. It triggers. Holy shit. Lori was out of the room. So I said, wow, that's weird that it went off. But, of course, I was moving my camera, so the infrared light from my camera set the peekaboo doll off, which was a total bust because we were, like, all getting, you know, scared, you know, like, oh, my God. So it turned out to be a bust. Lori had left the room, and she comes back and sits down. So I wait for the opportune moment to wave my infrared in front of that. And I said, holy shit. And she gets, did that go off? I said, yeah. And then she realized I was, you know, because I'm very sarcastic. And she realized that I had put a fast one on her with the infrared light. So that's some things, I guess, a warning to most people that you need to test this stuff, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would rush to judgment saying it's paranormal without even knowing that they're doing it.
Exactly. Now, interestingly enough, so we had these two objects fairly. We had the doll. They were kind of triangular shaping from this dollhouse. The doll and the lighthouse were kind of the same distance away from me. And the choo-choo train was sort of maybe 2 feet, 5 feet from me, but they were all close to each other, maybe 2 or 3 feet. And everybody was sitting still. Nobody was near the lantern, and it goes off. Chirp, 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 chirp. You know, I said, wow. And so that's interesting. That's actually on video, and the one girl wants me to capture the tape and show it to her because she really thinks it's something. But this leads me to my next question, Kurt. With all this technology, I gave you sort of a successful failure, a hit, and a sort of a false hit with the infrared light. Should we be relying on all this technology as a means of trigger or identification? Do you think this is a viable atomic age?
I would say yes in one way and no in the other. I think it can help. I think technology can help, but I think I think a lot of people just, you know, get this equipment and rush to judgment, but I think there needs to be scientific studies done on it. I think we need to get the brains, you know. I know we can develop this equipment, but we need to get these brains that, you know, these IQs and these top schools with big science, you know, departments that can run, tests and, study the data and, give a probability. I think we need to do something like that needs to be done with the equipment. Because if you take a lot of the equipment says it's for entertainment purposes only, so it really, it defeats the cause if it's for entertainment purposes only. If you're using it for research, I think you need to study the data, collect the data, study it, and have hypotheses. You know how you write a standard, science lab report. I think more of that needs to be done. I know myself, I haven't done it. I can say, no, I have not done it. I speak about it, but have I done it? No. Should I? I would say yes. I'd like to see more data on the information.
I agree with you.
Everyone says, okay, EMF is a key detector of a paranormal activity. Okay, but where's the scientific proof? How can we validate that?
Surely does come up. I mean, it does pick up, show up, and I don't know. People talk about fault lines and other magnetic fields in the ground that could be doing this. So there's a lot of question there and a lot of doubt and skepticism.
I agree. I mean, I would say I think the equipment can be trustworthy, but until it's been, at least have some kind of scientific calculation done. I should say, test done and. Huge study. I mean, you could, I'm sure how I would do it. I have no idea. I'm not a scientist, unfortunately. I enjoyed, go out and doing ghost hunting, but I like to further my career, but into that, into the research part, but how though? I mean.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's a critical question, actually. Just to know, that these things are out there and people keep developing more sophisticated things that, that are costly and expensive.
And it's great to see that people are out there doing it, but is it trustworthy? Or is it out just people out there to make a buck?
Well, we also talked about this before, Kurt, the dependability and the credibility of all these devices, even EVPs nonetheless, because that's one of the most distinct utilized proof that people use.
And, mm-hmm.
And like you said, you had your favorite recorder, and yours would get stuff that other people wouldn't. And for me, I don't think I've gotten an EVP once, but it wasn't something that I would say, oh, I could hear that, So I'm not a good EVP person. But all in all, I think you're right. We need to work on. I guess the scientific proof that we're always seeking is within these devices, but. The device has to be credible or made credible.
I think in order to validate the field, I think it needs to be done. The scientific side of it needs to be done.
I agree. Okay, so that was my – but I really enjoyed the place. It was a beautiful place, Grumblethorpe, PA, or Pennsylvania, here in Philadelphia.
Any personal experiences there?
None for me. Lori kind of sensed some things, but there was nothing really. Oh, that's the other part. So I got the caretaker on the side, and she says to me, she lives next door, and her, at the time, 6-year-old daughter was in the place and says, something. And she was kind of whispering because the others were still working in the other room. She said her daughter basically ran in and said, Mommy, Mommy, I don't want to see the faceless woman anymore. And she said, what faceless woman? And she said, over there. And of course, there was nothing there. And I don't know if she might have said she saw it twice. So a couple years had passed, or a year had passed, and there's another little boy on a school tour or something of that nature. And he was about her age, 6 or 7. And he says, and so the mom and the daughter are there, while these other kids were there. And the boy says, do you see the woman with the faceless woman? Did you see the faceless woman? And of course, the little girl hears this, and she says, "See, Mommy, see," and so that's just kind of neat for the mom who didn't have any visual experiences like that for her daughter to be validated from some other little boy who knows no, of course, doesn't know the history of hauntings and such like that,
Interesting. But, you know, that's gonna lead up to something a little later on the show. Just remember that, how you're talking about children. So just remember that.
Yeah, well, and she was very open for this child, you know, for her child. She was supportive to her child, too, you know.
I mean, I think you got to be supportive of your children, because if not, it's going to – I think they're not going to – when something like that happens, they're going to get even more scared, I think. They're not going to trust you.
No, it's true. Yeah. And she said there was one other incident that she really knew first, sort of firsthand. They were giving another tour education session, and one lady was late, and they were all somewhere in the house, and she knocked on the door, and you know, somebody let her in, and she goes in, and then the caretaker sees her or greets her. She says, "Oh, who is the woman that let me in, dressed in period clothes?" And of course, she says, "Well, we have nobody here like that today," and she says, "No, I insist. She let me in and closed the door, but I don't see her now."
Interesting. Period clothing too. That seems like I mean, what period do you know? What period was it?
Oh, I think I would guess just an older dress, probably in, you know, late 1800s or something, or you know. So I didn't really get that, but that was the two stories she had told me that she honestly knew it to be a haunting for that location.
So,
or the factual proof that she had.
Has all the evidence been reviewed of your investigation there?
Not yet. I'm sure they did a lot of audio recording. I have the two tapes. I'm going to capture the part. We only had 3 hours there, by the way, so that was a very short time.
And yeah.
I think it was $250 or $300.
Ow.
Yeah, so it's very expensive, you know. I mean, there were seven of us, so it came down to about $40 each.
That's not bad, but still, though, paying for an investigation. But as long as it went to the, you know, for a good cause, okay.
Yeah, it was feeding the foundation or whatever, you know, the nonprofit that runs the place, because it's a historic spot. So that's, you know, why we target them places. But it was nice for Lori, yet again, to get us into a place where nobody's been, that had some history to it, because, you know, she was. It's kind of hard to let strangers in your house to run around for 3 hours, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So,
but hey, we're gonna take a real quick break. We're gonna I said break twice. Wow. We're gonna play a quick promo about Parapods. Hopefully, people are signing up for Parapods. It's a great place to capture your if you're a paranormal radio, or, you know, there's a lot of shows on there, and you can get email updates. Whenever a new show is updated, it emails you, lets you know, and you can go in and listen to it. Or even if you're subscribed to iTunes, it'll download for, you know, automatically for you. So it's a great tool. It's a great website. So if everyone can hang tight, we'll be right back with PIR Radio live on the Paranormal Radio Online Network.
PIR Radio will be right back after these messages.
Radio show host, your podcast not getting enough hits, and you want more? There is a brand new solution for you. A free podcast directory for your paranormal listening needs. Visit Parapods at www.parapods.com. That's www.parapods.com.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled program on PIR Radio.
Alrighty, we're back with Kurt and Bill tonight live on the PIR Radio show, talk radio show, actually, on the PRO Radio Network. We stream also to the PPRN Radio Network, and also our new affiliate that has picked up our link, our stream, is the Afterlife Talk Radio Network. So we appreciate them, and we are going to have Robert and Gary on. They're the owners of Afterlife Talk Radio. They should be with us in a couple weeks. We're going to set something up and have a chat with them. I know they do a couple shows, and I believe they're both mediums. So I know it'll be interesting. Medium, either they're mediums or psychics. I'm not sure exactly which one they are. I'm sure Bill will enjoy that show.
Yes, I will.
But you know what, Bill? Let's get into some topics. You know, you have one about UFOs here that you want to talk about. So I'm gonna turn it over to you and let's hear it.
Oh wow! You know, Kurt, there's been some videos out there from Brightly, and I'm gonna read you the article as best as I can because I really didn't read it all the way. But
hey, real quick, Bill, before we get into it, what we can do is when we read these articles, what I'll do is I have them saved. What I'll do is I'll post them to the news, the front page of the PIR website the following day when the podcast is up. That way, if people want to watch the videos, there's a link to it, and they can just click the link, and it should go to the page, and they can watch the videos that way.
Awesome. So there seems to be a lot of UFO spotting in England and Russia right now, and there's some videos that have been coming up, and brightly lit UFOs over the, oh, I got this from the Huffington Post, so I'm sure if you search within their UFO spotters, England and Russia, it'll come up also. Brightly lit UFOs over the UK and Russia are lighting up the skies and burning up the internet, but do they really stand up to the scrutiny? So it goes on to say, a man referring to himself as Space 999 Dude posted a video on YouTube. It shows something in the sky over the Thames Estuary near London on February 5th. He wrote that the object seems too bright for a boat, but he could be wrong, and looked like it was above the water. It was fairly a long way off, and he had his 40x zoom all the way out, hence the shaky footage. So he says, I always carry my camcorder in the car and think more people should be looking and keeping cameras at the ready. Space Dude's video pulled in a lot of comments and many wondered why the clip was under a minute in length, perhaps to some who complained that the first video clip didn't offer any long-range perspective of the UFO he had posted, a second clip showing the far away and close-up views of it. So that clip's actually available. I watched some of it, and it's an interesting clip. It's way far away, and it looks like something unusual and something that's not noticeable. So I encourage – what do you think about this whole UFO thing, by the way, Kurt? It seems to be London and Russia seem to be having more and more skeptics and incidences coming up. And
well, it seems like their government is more open to it compared to ours. I mean, it's scary stuff, man. Thinking about a UFO, is there really life other than us? You know, you're always brought up and saying that we're the only planet. But you know, with NASA finding all these new, you know, habitable planets, you know, doing their research, it could be true. I think I haven't watched the videos myself yet, but I'm going to. I don't want to play it right now because I don't know if there's audio.
Yeah, there's a little sound from his camcorder. It's very minimal, but yeah,
it's interesting. It's, I mean, could some of it be debunked? Yes. Could some of it be fake? Probably. I mean, it's interesting though. I mean, the lights configurations. Is it military? I mean, are we getting the truth from our government if it's military or not?
That's true. Yeah. Well, I think there's some reason behind it because there's been a lot of footage out there. There was some other sphere on the internet too a week before, and it just looked like a sphere floating around in the daytime. So, of course, it did look like a weather balloon. It could be a weather balloon, but it kind of moved around, you know. So I think with all these sightings, there has to be something up there.
Do you think Stonehenge has something to do with it? You know, just like, you know, like how the pyramids. You know, there's some of those conspiracies that the pyramids were built by extraterrestrial beings and not, you know, not the Egyptians.
I absolutely believe that it could be because, you know, they have hard enough time moving huge stones into place nowadays, let alone from, you know, back then. I mean, they can barely cut them with such precision and move them into position. So I'm watching this video actually now, so it's quite interesting.
Do you get commentary from the guy?
I have the audio turned down, but I know what
let's play it and, you know, let's see if he gives us any commentary. It's just a quick 53-second clip here. We'll play the short version.
You're going to play it yourself?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and play it. Let's just see what the guy has to say. It says the video took object over Thames Estuary 5225 of 12. Very interesting. That's a... You can hear cars in the background. I mean...
So you're watching the 52-second clip or the...
The 53-second clip. There's one huge bright light, and there's lots of small. At first, I thought I heard a helicopter, but it was a car engine, like a diesel engine. The camera's a little shaky.
Yeah, in a longer clip, he actually zooms out, and you can see how far away it really is.
My first instinct saying it looks like it's not fake, but I'm not a video expert, though. Just looking at it, just because of the way he's shaking and holding it.
Right.
I would say it's real. But, I mean...
Well, real UFO, which...
Yeah. It actually could be, something visiting our planet. I mean, UFO sightings in England are quite popular, even back in the early 1900s and to now.
I agree, and this is, when he zooms out all the way, you can actually see. I don't know if that's in your clip, but when you zoom out all the way, when he zooms out, you can actually see that it's above the horizon.
Yeah, I'm going to play clip two, the zooming in and out.
Oh, and Justin's saying that they definitely should start using a tripod. Maybe they should report that on his YouTube page.
Yeah, you can hear people talking in the background, but what are they saying, though? It looks like a mushroom-like shaped figure, but you can see there's a bottom. Could it be a hot air balloon with just weird lights on it? Because hot air balloons do come in, they can come in many different shades or... He's zooming out.
It's very far, it could be anything, but he does get it in focus.
Yeah, he gets a good shot of it. See, now when he zooms in and out, it's not the same picture quality as the shorter one.
Right. And yeah, Justin says a radio-controlled helicopter, and I think from the chat room. And that was actually brought up in the article. There's talking about that could be a radio controlled car, helicopter or some sort, and that could be,
Yeah.
So then, if it is, it's maybe not that far in the distance.
Well, I'd like to get some of the listeners, their opinion on it. I'll post a link on the PIR radio website. It's posted right now too in the chat room. I can post it again. But take a look at it. If you have any comments or whatever, feel free to email us. You can hit us up at the contact us page and email us. We'd like just to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that there's always skeptics and there's always things that happen that make people believe, and this is clearly one of them.
Yeah, I think so. So I mean, it's shaky. The tripod would work great, I think. I really think, but
Well, I've never had. Well, everyone.
Actually, when I go on paranormal investigations, when I like to take a lot of pictures in one area, the tripod comes out just so I can, get clear, steady pictures. Especially when I'm like outside. I think I like the tripod. I think it'll help. Study it. But it's an interesting video. I'd love to hear what people have to say about it. Maybe we get some feedback. But as you can hear, we're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to PIR Radio live on the PRO Radio Network. So enjoy the tune, and we'll be right back after this message. Okay, guys? Alrighty.
scheduled program on PIR Radio.
Alrighty, hope you like that alternate version of Spin Me Round, Something Dead or Alive, You Spin Me Right Round, Round, Round. That was the techno version. That was a pretty good version of it, I think. I don't know, something to speed it up and, you know, get everyone, you know, the head bob a little bit. But we were talking about UFOs last, but we do have a guest on the line with us. We have a caller, I should say. Is Justin with us?
Justin is here.
Hey, Justin, how's it going?
Hey, guys, how's it going tonight?
You know what? We were good when you were on. You know, when you were on as a guest, we didn't say a that much.
Neither did I.
That's true.
And you got beat up with that, you know.
Because you know, the last time when we had Aaron on, we were giving her a hard time about
Aaron,
that.
Aaron.
A. but what do you think of that UFO story?
I read it earlier today in the Huffington Post too.
Yeah,
and just like you guys were saying, you know, it does give you a sky shot, so you can kind of see further away and kind of close up, but there isn't really a lot of context aside from that. Doesn't seem like there's anybody else really reacting or anything like that either. I mean, I know if I saw a UFO on video, or at least on my video camera, I would probably be adding dialogue throughout the entire video.
It seemed like he was real calm. I mean, you can't, you know, I played both videos, you know, you can hear some lady speaking, but it didn't seem like she was in shock or anything. I think if it was me personally, I'd be like going, oh my God, what the hell is that? I think I'd be cussing.
Yeah, sound like the double rainbow guy.
I'd be cussing up a storm. I think we couldn't probably play it on PIR radio.
Justin, what's been up, man? Have you done anything since we last heard from you?
Not too much in particular. Just working and reading and writing. I recently wrote an article about the application of flashlight vigils during investigations.
Oh.
Is that where the flashlight turns on and off?
That's the one.
Come on! I don't think that I'm sorry. And if you're a believer in it, that's fine. But I absolutely do not believe in that at all.
Well, actually, the article pokes holes in the logic. Like, it gets into how there can only ever be one right answer, and it's a 50-50. It's 50-50 chance of getting a right answer every time, to mention, the flashlight itself is tampered with to the point where chance is like the major fundamental flaw.
Well, let's put the flashlight on a bed, and then you sit down on the bed. What's going to happen?
The flashlight's going to turn on.
And when you can move your legs to where, you know, you can move to where, you know, it's like a sleight of hand trick to make the flashlight come on and off. I think you've probably heard me talk about that, and I don't think it's real. You can't use it as evidence of paranormal activity.
More or less, the article goes through the application of it, like from a layman's, like what you would see on TV and stuff, and then it pokes holes in the logic behind that, as well as gives you a bunch of fundamental issues with the whole experiment, like I said, about it being chance or the flashlight itself or the amount of power in the batteries, things like that. And then if you were to actually, you know, if you thought it warranted further research or you did want to try it, at least try these steps. Like, don't ask yes or no closed-ended questions. Ask for different responses or use multiple flashlights that are designated yes and no, so at least you know that you're getting a concrete answer.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know, there's another device that Lori uses. It's called something pod. It's this little thing that glows red most times, but.
The ePod?
ePod. I never seen it do anything, you know, substantial. I mean, it glows red, comes on, comes off, but nobody's near it. But it never does anything. Like they say, oh, turn it green or something because it can change colors and it never, you know.
That's the one that lit. It emits its own electromagnetic field, right?
That's right.
And looks for any differences or variations.
That's right.
Okay. Now,
can't you correlate the flashlight to like the K2 without the toggle switch?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the examples I use. Is that the K2 is just another form of the same thing, really, using the yes or no responses.
You know, I know. a lot of people use the K2, and you see it a lot on TV. My problem is you know, with the K2 is I don't think it's accurate, because you have, especially when you're on TV and you have all that, you have the camera equipment and you have your microphones emitting all that.
Well, you know, Kurt, a walkie-talkie anywhere in the same room with the K2 will trip it to the full mount.
True. I mean, but what happens when you turn your walkie-talkie, you know, you could have a walkie-talkie on and have the volume turned down and someone could be...
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. They could be just clicking it.
Clicking it.
Response.
Personally, I'm really, really skeptical of BMF hypothesis as a whole, altogether. I mean, if you really, really dig all the way back to where the first mention of electromagnetic fields or anything like that reference to ghosts is, it's actually a work of fiction.
Interesting. Now, when was this? I mean, how?
It would have been, I know that, like, for instance, are you aware, like, do you know the Society of Psychical Research is?
No.
Never heard of it. That's not the Edgar Cayce Foundation, something.
No. It's a UK organization that's been looking into hauntings and paranormal phenomena for, like, the last 200 years.
Wow.
So everybody from, like,
we need to get the show.
William Hall and people like that were members.
So what? Go, continue.
About the whole electromagnetic field hypothesis?
This group, what did they come up with, too? Did they have a theory on the EMF?
Well, no. Like I was saying, the only mention that I found in their, or at least that I've heard of being found in their archives, was reference to EM. And I don't even think it was in reference to electromagnetic fields, but I think it had to do with hypnosis, to tell you the honest truth.
And what did you know? My psychic Lori, she will make fun of the K2. If somebody whips one out on an investigation, she will actually almost belittle them with it and tell them that they can't use it on her investigation. So I've seen it done. So that's where she stands with the K2. I don't know what your EMF or experience.
Well, the way I look at it is, if you are going to use it and you're going to base it on a hypothesis, one of the ones that I would say would be in the forefront would be, based on Michael Persinger's work out of, Laurentian University in Ontario. And he's conducted the experiments with the God Helmet. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Wow. I mean,
Justin, you're going to take over as host.
Yeah, you're the...
Well, okay, anyway.
You know, we're going to have like a Justin spot where he records, you know, a tidbit for us every week. That'd be awesome. You're the prime example of a paranormal investigation group or research group that does research into this stuff. You're not all about, you know, everything's haunted. Get into it. You get into the grind. You find out and you do your research, which is awesome. You don't hear a lot about this stuff.
If I was to point anyone in a direction, honestly, from like a research standpoint, and they were looking for a flat out neutral answer that didn't favor any sort of hypothesis and looked at it, you know, impartially and just wanted to know if there was phenomena happening, I would probably point you towards an organization called Paranormal Studies and Investigations Canada. They really do set a really great example, a prime example, in my opinion.
That's awesome.
Is that a group, or is that like a group of groups? Is that just one group that, you know, has high standards?
I would say they do have standards, very much so. For instance, to become a member of PsyCon, you do have to write, I believe, an exam, as well as two articles which need to be submitted for peer review. But in terms of, like, affiliations and things, I don't think they have an affiliate program. They do have a few groups that they do affiliate with, I believe. But more or less, it's just interested parties from, you know, any walk of life, right? You don't need to have an expertise, but I do know that there are some PhDs and, you know, some really bright academic type people who consult and work with them directly, I think.
Well, just on a side note, we'd love to have them come on our show and teach us something or, you know, give us some information that if there's anything you can do to help us out, that'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I would point people to their website. Some other people who you might be interested from Canada would be Sue St. Clair and Matthew Didier. Both of them have been in the field for, oh gosh, I think they said they had a combined experience of 25 years. But again, they're members of PsyCan as well and pretty much follow the same standard.
Do you see standards different compared to, I know you're in Canada, but I know you deal with, you know, I'm sure you network with a lot of people from the States. Do you see standards different between Canada and the States?
I would say yes, actually.
And you can be honest. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Do you think the standards are set a little higher for teams up in Canada compared to the States?
I would say, like, we do have people running around with, you know, K2 and EMF detectors labeling everything as haunted just as much as they probably do in the States. I think it's a little bit more prevalent in the States. Like, there's just more groups. So, like, I wouldn't be able to give you an accurate answer, let's put it that way. But I do think that there are some really great groups in the UK, Canada, and in the US, including the Ryan Institute, that have been doing work for a while now that's pretty much all on the same level of standards.
Now, do you think there should be, with all the paranormal investigation teams out there, I know there's different techniques and different ways and means that each group does it, but do you think there should be a set standard, though, for all the groups out there, ethically-wise? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I do think ethics are a big part of paranormal investigation that is overlooked. Probably the biggest thing that's overlooked. I don't think that you'll ever get anybody to commit to any sort of ethical standards unless they're under some sort of umbrella. And people don't like to go under umbrellas because they don't like to feel like they're controlled. With that said, though, I do think that is something that needs to be addressed, at least within the paranormal community. You know, I think people should start discussing things more. Let me think here. For instance, a lot of people focus on sites that are have had a lot of atrocities in the past or a really, really dark history, and then try to relate that to the history of hauntings as well. But I would say that that's not always the case. People see or perceive spirits and other things. It doesn't really matter where, if there's an atrocity or not. For instance, one could look at Waverly Hills Sanatorium. You'll have one group of people who tell you that this is a body chute, this is a death tunnel, that people were transported inhumanely. Then you'll have other people who are saying, well, no, actually, a lot of people really respected this place and treated it like a community. They made friends here. They had family here. They developed relationships. And maybe that's the reason why they're sticking around.
And the one thing that makes me mad about Waverly is that they always keep saying that 65,000 to 70,000 people died there, but that's not true. It's only been documented that there's only about 6,500 actual death certificates from Waverly Hills that have been documented right now. I mean, the rest can just be, it's just like folklore or legend, but they present it as fact, but it's not true, though.
Almost like guilt by omission. Guilty by not, just saying that the facts were omitted.
Now, you're talking about atrocities. Do you think some places should be off limits from investigating? I know, I personally asked you a question on your group about something in Canada. I can't remember exactly what it is, and I respected your response on that. It was something to do with some schools or something. I'm trying to go back.
Yeah, it would be residential schools here in Canada. Yeah,
and you're talking about atrocities. So do you think like the 9/11 site here and the death camps in World War II. Do you think some places where these atrocities happen, do you think they should be off limits to people trying to investigate?
I do. I do very much think that. Because, I mean, if you look at, let's say, for instance, Auschwitz, I believe I heard that they're doing ghost tours now. There's still people who are living, their relatives were part of that. They were part of that. That's something that's still very much tangible, and it has meaning today. when you're looking at something that might have happened 200 to 300 years ago with, you know, no descendants or any way to link that to a certain group of people, or if you know that somebody isn't going to be offended by you looking into it and you're looking at the data rather than the atrocity, yeah, I think people should steer clear of that stuff. 9/11 site, definitely a big no. Same with Auschwitz residential schools. But, I mean, I think it's also a matter of using your better judgment, right? Are you going in to places because bad things happened and you think that that's why they might be haunted? Or are you going in because there's actual reports that say, you know, so-and-so saw this, so-and-so heard this?
You know, Justin, that's interesting because that's why we actually – I like going to people's home, private homes where there is no history over a historic place. Because it's just when we find something out or have information, then the homeowner validates it, just makes it more credible to us as a team, which gives us a good feeling. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, historic places can be Googled, you know, so easily, and as soon as somebody writes something today, it's indexed on the Google and within, you know, half an hour, 10 minutes, I don't know. It's very fast now, you know?
That purple monkey dishwasher effect.
Purple, what was that one more time? Purple?
Purple monkey dishwasher.
I've never heard that one before.
No, you know, it's actually, it was a skit they did on The Simpsons where they started out saying something to one person, you know, telephone game. Uh-huh. And by the time it got to the end of the line, it was... You know, whatever they had said, it had turned into Purple Monkey Dishwasher.
Right.
That's. I don't watch The Simpsons that much, so.
So just whisper down the lane sort of thing, huh?
That's it. Can we use that for future shows?
Purple Monkey Dishwasher?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing you might want to look into is communal reinforcement. It kind of shares some of the same traits.
Say that again?
Communal reinforcement?
Communal reinforcement, right?
I've never heard of that.
From what I understand, it was coined by the guy who wrote the Skeptic's Dictionary because he didn't have an actual word for the phenomenon he was trying to label. But more or less, he says that when something is asserted within a community, regardless of it's true or not, if enough people accept it, then after a while it will become the standard. So, for instance, you could relate that to orbs.
Orbs. I saw quite a few pictures this week on Facebook with orbs on it, and they all thought they were orbs.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Especially when they're outside, too. It's like, are you joking me? And it takes everything for me to restrain myself from saying something.
And it takes only one or two people to start that, to spread that ideology, and then they tell their friends, and then, you know, the other people want their photos to be paranormal, and so on and so forth. It's this vicious cycle.
And it's like you get these people, oh, those are great pictures of orbs. And it's like, come on, are you for real? And then I have to hold back because I don't want to be the Mr. Mean. I can't be Mr. Mean. I don't know why.
Yeah, we have people actually sending us photos, and I talk to them, and they say, oh, yeah, I'll send you these photos of these, you know, this ghost or the way they say it. And it turns out to be an orb over their son. And, you know, so there's two things. There's somebody they care about, and there's something they know that's communal reinforcement, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it's actually on Wikipedia, communal reinforcement. So,
yeah, and again, like I would be skeptical of communal reinforcement itself as a label because, like I said, it was written by the guy who made the Skeptic's Dictionary. He didn't have a term to describe it. He doesn't have any studies or data to say that that is an actual phenomenon. If anything, communal reinforcement in itself is a perfect example of communal reinforcement.
Interesting.
If you go to Wikipedia, you'll see it there, right?
Yep.
Well, that's the original copy is on his website on the Skeptic's Dictionary in the definition section. But the Wikipedia article has actually been changed because other people said, yeah, okay, like... That can be applied to this. That can be applied to Alcoholic Anonymous. That can be applied to anti-drinking driving campaigns.
Right. Well, it's no different than people, and I call it matrixing, and then Lori always yells at me when they see something that, like you said, within a photo, that's really not there. It's just some distorted image that they can relate to, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's the same sort of thing where people try to see something that could be there. And it's hard because some things do look like faces and some things, you know, I've seen some very creepy photos, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, did you guys happen to see the cloud in, I think it was shot in New Brunswick. It was actually from my province here in Canada. It made it to Live Science's top 10 most like phenomenal things in 2011.
Oh, what was the cloud of? You know, what was the picture?
Well, if you look it up, it's a guy standing like in his backyard and he's looking at the storm cloud and the storm cloud takes on the image of a face. Like, and I saw a shape in the cloud or whatever, but to look at it, it almost looks like it was purposefully designed to look like a face. It looks very much like, if it was 3,000 years ago and I was standing in a field looking at that, I would probably think that there was something higher up there causing that to happen.
All right, so there's a bunch of video of it, yeah?
There's one video of it because I think he was only able, like you would only be able to see it from one perspective.
It's listed on a lot of sites, yeah.
Yeah, I'll link it to you here. Let me find it.
All right.
Interesting. Can we put that link? We'll have to put put that link on the PIRO website if that's okay.
Yeah.
Just so people, you know, they can get something. But we only have a couple more minutes left. Now, Justin, what's up for Maritime Paranormal for this year? Anything?
Actually, we have a few big things going on this year. I don't really want to say exactly what yet, but yeah. there are some historic locations that are fairly well known, larger locations. So it's really going to be a test to see if we can pull it off logistically. But moving forward, we're going to be releasing a new website. Me and my co-conspirator and actually my boss are releasing a new website, and we're going to go all out with it. Google Maps, reporting forms, things like that.
Excellent. Sounds like you guys got some big things going on.
Wouldn't exactly call them big yet, but we're definitely moving forward.
Why don't you keep us posted and get you back on after your investigations and
any
EVPs or EMF action, you know, Justin?
Oh, that was it. We are planning a trip to the States as well.
Oh, where are you going? Anywhere good?
We will be going to Pennsylvania, but that's all I can say for now.
Ah.
I live in Philadelphia, so when you cruise by this way.
And Bill, don't promise a cheesesteak because you never come through on it.
Cheesesteak? Oh, man. I tried one once. It didn't sit well. I didn't understand it.
It's kind of greasy. But you didn't have the right one. That's the problem, Justin.
Well, the one I ate was in Florida, so.
That's wrong. That's not the right one.
Wrong. That's a fail, Justin. And it said it was a Philadelphia cheesesteak, I guess.
It did. That's came from the hotel.
It's a lie!
Talk about somebody believing something that can't be true. It can't be from Philadelphia if you're in the hotel. Eating at the hotel bar, nonetheless. I'm just kidding. All right. So we got to wrap up, Justin, but maybe we'll get you on next week or the following week if you want to give us a little tidbit or something.
Yeah, hang on the line real quick, Justin, as we end the show. If you want to hang on, that'd be great.
Sure.
We'll chat afterwards. Bill, you know.
Right, I'm really upset for you.
Uh-oh.
Second week that we haven't talked about the babies are born with intuitive psychic knowledge.
But you know what? We'll lead with that next week.
Awesome.
It's going to be interesting. But you know what? We Justin came on, and I like talking to Justin. You learn a lot. Every time the two times we've had him on, it's like, wow.
Yeah. But moving forward. I can't wait till he comes to Pennsylvania here in Philadelphia, though.
I know.
Anyway.
Do you have anything else you wanted to say before we get off the air?
Me?
Me?
Justin, give your website up.
Yeah, give your website out, Justin.
www.maritimeparanormal.ca. You can also access it through maritimeparanormal.com. And we're available both on Facebook and on Twitter as Maritime Ghosts.
Awesome.
Hey.
For me, Kurt, that's it. We have an investigation on the 20th, which will actually be past our next show, so that's all right. So we'll I won't have anything paranormal to talk about next week, I hope.
We'll talk about my baby story.
All right.
That's a good one, too. But don't forget, coming up next on the Paranormal Radio Online Network, we have the man who talks to angels, Ron Reeder. His show is always great. Check it out if you can.
I know you're calling for a reading.
I know his website is www.tmwtta.com. He does a TV side too, so and he does take Skype call-ins. I believe his Skype number is Danbury520. I believe that's his Skype name, but I don't know his phone number calling. But you know what? He'll be live on the Paranormal Radio Online Network next. Don't forget, you can get the podcast. The podcast will be up in the next day or two. We'll have links to Bill's UFO story, and we'll also get the link that we talked with Justin about that pit cloud. We'll get the link to that on the news section of PIR Radio. We'll link that up for everyone. But until next week, Bill.
Keep it paranormal.
And hopefully you got your paranormal radio experience with PIR Radio. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to PIR Radio. Come back every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on the ASPRN Radio Network and the PRO Radio Network to get the very best in paranormal radio on the Internet. Please visit our website at www.pirradio.com. PIR Radio is sponsored by the Peach State Paranormal Radio Network and www.hauntedtube.com.